positively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our souls want a connection to the great mystery, and the day is coming when science will more readily accept the reality of mystical experience. Can quantum physics provide evidence of the existence of the divine? What is soul, and how can we get to know it more deeply? Why do our guests describe the era in which we are now living as the age of surprise? We'll be exploring the answers to these and many other questions with our guests, William Arntz and Deirdre Haid. William Arntz is a physicist and filmmaker and creator of the film What the Bleep Do We Know? Deirdre Haid is a modern-day mystic, poet, and visionary leader in the ancient arts of the wisdom traditions and creator of The Radiance Journey, a path to mystical knowledge that unites the magical with the material. Together, William Arntz and Deirdre Haid, a husband and wife team, explore how science merges with mystical prophecy to help us navigate the upheaval and ever-changing surprises in these postmodern times. They are co-creators of the book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, with the award-winning photography of Andre Balog, which is a feast of mystical insights and poetry with breathtaking photographs. Join us for the next hour as we explore a mystical map for inner awakening with our guest, the mystic Deirdre Haid and the physicist William Arntz. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Deirdre, William, welcome.
Thank you. Wow. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I would love to have you tell a little of your story to begin with for our listeners. And William, I'd like to start with you. You started off as a laser physicist. Tell us a little bit of your background.
A laser physicist. I got out of college and I was hired to work on what was to become the Star Wars program. But this was way
before. Not the movie.
No. This was the things that were really supposed to work. And
Reagan.
Yeah. Well, he called it Star Wars, but I started working on it 8 years before Reagan. That's when we started working on it. And the idea was to take a huge laser, put it in an airplane, fly it up real high, and melt Russian missiles out of the sky. So I developed the wave optic simulators in order to predict what the lasers would actually do.
So that was a pretty ambitious project, and then you moved on to other projects after that. Can you say something about that?
Well, after that, I started doing computers to basically pay the bills, and eventually I wrote a system software called Autosys that Fortune 500 companies are using around the world now. I sold that company off, and then I did a second one, and I sold that off. And at that point, I retired, and I figured, okay, now I'm just going to watch the clouds roll through. But I got this funny little notion to make a film. And it started off as just a small little documentary about some of the parallels between physics and spirituality, because I've been studying spirituality for many years at that point. And it started as just a little, I called it a dinky little documentary, and I got carried away and eventually spent millions of dollars for my hard-earned software companies and made What the Bleep Do We Know. And the idea was to get it in movie theaters around the world, and it actually did.
So, and is that film still available, like on DVD or Netflix or something like that?
Yeah, you can get it on DVD. It was on Netflix for a while. Then it's not. Then they're going to put it back on. So it's out there electronically.
Right. And it's still very, very fascinating with great interviews. I think some of our listeners have checked it out. Thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure.
And Deirdre, let's talk about your background. You are a mystic. Let's just talk about maybe an early instance in your life that started you off in this whole path. Can you say something about your background?
Yes, thank you. And yes, I am a mystic. I took a lifetime to figure out what I was. And I'm very grateful for that now, Justine. But I, my first memory of a mystical experience of a phenomenon of a greater reality, I was actually 3 years old, very young. And at that time, I truly believed that everything was alive, the rocks, the trees, the ocean, the clouds, everything in nature, the birds were part of my family. I did not understand nature to be non-human. I didn't give, like my parents were more important than the tree. As a matter of fact, there was a pine tree that was a huge pine tree where we used to go camping that told me he was my grandfather. And I would go visit him every day to say, good morning. Hi, granddad. And one morning I was standing in front of my grandfather pine tree when a cloud opened up way up in his branches. And I saw in this cloud a pickup truck run over our family tent where my baby brother, who was 2 months old, was sleeping. I immediately ran. I didn't think, do I run, do I not run? I just ran up the hill all the way. It was on an incline up to where our tent was.
And you're like three years old. Your little legs are
very
just...
Very little, yes. And it was very hard to run. I remember panting and being terrified I wasn't going to get to this tent in time. And I got in the tent. The cot was up to my shoulders, and my brother was huge. And I remembered my parents saying, don't drop your brother. Never hold your brother by yourself. But I knew I had to get him out of the tent. I picked him up, and I ran out of our tent. Just as I ran out, a pickup truck ran over the tent. It rolled down the hill and crashed into the tree, my grandfather pine tree, where I had been standing. I heard my mother and father screaming at the top of their lungs, and it wasn't until the dust settled that they saw me standing there. They ran over, they picked us up into their arms, and they kept saying, oh my gosh, how did this happen? And my father, who's a research scientist from the University of Chicago, atheist, blurted out, you know, this is a miracle. It's a miracle. I remember wanting to tell them how I knew to get my brother, but I couldn't speak English, and my words were coming out very fast, very passionately, and they were looking at me perplexed, and they kept saying, I think she's trying to tell us something. Deirdre, use your words, use your words. And I got so angry because I'm using my words, but your words are too slow and cumbersome. You need to just know how to speak my language. Later on, I was able to use my words and tell them what happened. And to this day, that story is family lore and our story. Everybody knows it. We grew up with it. Wow. So that was my first experience of a greater reality.
So what I'm struck by in that story, Deirdre, is that you got a message and you acted on it.
Yes.
Now that's kind of phenomenal. I mean, I think that we get messages all the time. In fact, that reminds me, I'm going to read something from your book, this gorgeous, gorgeous book that you both have put together. I'm going to call it Illuminations because it has to do with illuminations. And that was my question to you is, how many illuminations have you had that you didn't take in and were wasted? Just think about that for a minute. Do you think there were illuminations, true prophetic experiences for you that came to you and you did not open to them? You walked right by? Well, the answer is yes. You've had a few. And I love that because I think that we all, you know, what advice do the two of you have for us to recognize an illumination? Like, how do we know it's the voice of God or spirit or that great mystery or just, you know, just babble?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to tell yourself, yes, these things happen to me. Because so many people walk around, oh, I'm not psychic. Oh, no one ever talks to me. The angels never talk to me. Oh, I'm not worthy. People have all their excuses. The first thing you got to do is you got to say, oh, yes, those do happen to me. There have been, that's why the quote's in the book. People read that, they go, oh, wow, they're right. I have had those things. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is when it happens, just pause a moment and acknowledge it. That's the thing is you, when it happens, you're in this illuminated state, but often, you know, oh, gee, the cell phone rings or life happens and you just blow it off. But the thing is, even when you know before someone says something, what they're going to say, say to yourself, ah, I'm psychic. I picked that up. Because by doing that, you're creating the neural pathways. You're creating that part of you that then acknowledges that and lets it in. And that's just, you're just cracking the door a little wider every time. And at some point, it's going to fly open and who knows what's going to happen.
That just reminds me to ask you, William, as a scientist, your training is in science. And then you spoke about how, then you studied spirituality. But there's more to that story, how a scientist then acknowledges that there is something more going on in the universe than that which we can quantify.
Yeah, well, I think part of it, what I think part of it is just past life memories came back, awarenesses that I knew from before. And I couldn't put a word on it, but certain things just started making sense that were more than just the physical. And I was just drawn to it. I was curious. I started reading about it. And when I started looking at the reasons why people say, oh, that the spiritual stuff doesn't exist, the materialists say that, you know, I was like, you know, you're just arguing your assumption. You're saying it doesn't exist, so therefore it doesn't exist. And because it doesn't exist, it couldn't exist, so it doesn't exist. That's kind of what it is. And there's all this phenomena, like I said, the psychic stuff, near-death experiences, people remembering past life. I mean, it goes on and on. There's all these stories, data points, actually, of non-physical reality happening that scientists don't listen to. And so as a scientist, I try to be a real scientist and say, let's not blow off the data. There's a famous term in physics. They say a beautiful theory destroyed by an ugly fact. Yeah, and sometimes that happens. And, you know, but the facts are the facts. So the facts eventually just convinced me.
I'm here with William Arntz and Deirdre Haid, and they are the co-creators of the Not So Little Book of Surprises. If you want to know more about their work, go to the website bookofsurprises.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. So I want to spell their names for you. Deirdre spells her name D-E-I-R-D-R-E, Haid, H-A-D-E. And William Arntz, A-R-N-T-Z. And they are the co-creators of the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. I'm just reminded with your stories that we're talking about following our curiosity and how important that is to remain curious, especially in these times of mystical revelation. So is there anything that you want to say about curiosity?
Yes. Well, getting back to the story about when I was three and the illuminations have passed you by, quote from the Not So Little Book of Surprises, the key is to remain curious the way children are curious. And when you remain curious about life, that doorway of intuition, of knowing, of being able to be connected to something larger than your everyday small mind, that doorway then, when you need to have that really important piece of information, your doorway will be open for it to come in, such as turn right here, not left, you discover you just avoided a car crash. Or don't invest in this, invest in that. And you discover, oh my gosh, I could have lost everything, but I didn't. So having this doorway open is a tangible, practical part of who we are that developed during evolution for our survival so that we connect into a larger story. So we are protected. We can live a good life. We can know what's coming and where to go. Is there a fire on the other side of the mountain? Is there a flood coming? You'd better leave. And we all have this. And I want to, my clarion call is go into this, go into that curiosity so that your own inner voice of knowing has access to your, you know, ego ears.
You know, I'm reminded of your own story, Deirdre. I know that you have written or I've read some of your background, and you were in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes.
Your family, they were mostly atheistic.
Yes, all of them.
But part of your social life was to go to some gospel churches.
Right.
And so I want to ask you, because, and I understand that because part of my background is a bit like that. Mm-hmm. And what it is, what was that mechanism? So many of us then get enamored of something like let's say a gospel church or a certain religion or a certain tradition. And then we set up our tent there and we hunker down there, and that's where we live. We build our house and we put our fences around us, and there we are. So what is it that moved you on from that, appreciating that and the gifts that you got with that, but you continued on your journey?
Well, yes. Really clearly, the reason is that my father, the scientist, now working at St. Jude in research science, truly believed that science was the new God and all religion was superstition, and that we were going to find all the answers we needed through science. And I argued with him on this case, and I just didn't believe him. I just didn't believe him, and I thought he was short-sighted and closed-minded, and I told him that all the time. But when I was 16, science was tested because my father came to us one day. I had just turned 16. My brothers were 13 and 10. And he said, I have to take your mother to the hospital, and we'll be back. She may have to stay overnight, but we'll be right back. I said goodbye to my mother. I'll see you tomorrow. And day went by, 2 days, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks. I mean, it may have even been 3 weeks. It was a long time. And we kept saying, well, where's mom? Where's mom? And my dad said, oh, don't ask. Don't ask. This was back in the day, of course, when cancer was taboo. You just didn't talk about it. Then the day came, my father said, your mother's coming home. He brought her home, and we were in shock. He took her, carried her from the car, put her in a wheelchair, brought her in, and I'll never forget, my mother's eyes looked vacant. She was shriveled up. She was a big woman. She was German, tall. She was 5'9". She was tiny, and she had no breasts, and she was a buxom woman, and they had given her a year to live. So she was very depressed, very sad, and I just knew that my mother had to live, and my father, who is a research scientist in cancer, was, I can't discover how to cure this fast enough. And he was beside himself. So I started sitting with my mother at night and I started praying. I said, well, it can't hurt. And I just prayed and prayed to God. I said, God, if there's anything you can do so my mother can live, I would be so grateful because I love my mother so much and we need her. We need her. And I prayed and prayed. And after a time, I mean, I don't really remember how long, but it was fairly shortly. One night, late at night, I had fallen asleep with my hands on my mom the way I did many nights. She said, Deirdre, who turned the lights on in the room? And I looked up and there was a light on. The lights were on in the room. I said, well, I don't know. Maybe Kirby or Shane came in or my dad. He'd been sleeping now in a different room and walked around and the lights were all off. And we said, oh, my God, the room is full of light and we see it. And then my mother said, I'm not in any pain. And I said, well, we just have to be grateful and just keep going with this, whatever it is. I don't know what it is either. And the light kept coming. And the long and short of it is my mother lived 13 years longer than she was given. And the doctor said there was no medical reason for her to be alive. It defied all reason, all science. There was no reason. It was impossible. They didn't know why she was still alive.
You know, I'm just reminded, and I can't remember the actual scripture, but there's a scripture where some saint was talking about, well, or God through an angel or something said, well, if you can find 10 believers or three believers, then I'll save this city or something.
Right.
Do you recall that?
I do.
And Sodom and Gomorrah.
Was it Sodom and Gomorrah?
I forget. Yeah, and it was something God said, if you can just find 10 just men in the city, I won't destroy it.
Right.
And I guess they didn't find him.
I guess they didn't find him. But in this case, there that faith
was so big. Where two or more gathered.
Yeah. That faith was so big. And also what you're describing, too, is something that I would call something that I think the both of you have, which I recognize as a innate spiritual enthusiasm. Mm,
beautiful.
You know what I'm saying? That mm-hmm. that it's like, you know, your curiosity and your enthusiasm combined together has kept you on a path of exploration and this path of what you call the Tao of surprises. So I'd love for you to say something about what you mean by the Tao of surprises.
Well, the Tao of Surprises, let me tell you how we stumbled upon it. The surprises came to us. It's not like we figured out, oh, we're now in the age of surprise. I was pulling together the quotes from the book, from all of Deirdre's transcripts, and I started noticing the ones that I were pulling, the ones that I liked, were surprising, because being a mystic, she languages in different ways. She has insights that is just different, because she has a different set of eyes looking at things, and a lot of the things were surprising, like that quote you read, that's surprising. It's like, wow, I had mystical experiences. And so I came up with the title for the book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. And then after I did that, I remember my research from Bleep that what happens with a surprise happens in the brain. Dopamine floods the brain, and then suddenly you're in this moment of expanded awareness. You are in an altered state after a surprise. You have to figure out, is that gorilla going to come over here and eat me? Or did I just win the lottery? Which is it? So there's that moment of expanded time and awareness. So I said, oh, my God. And then your brain can rewire with neuroplasticity after a surprise. And I said, oh, my God, it's a doorway to transformation. So that's as far as we got in the beginning of the book. And then Deirdre started saying, oh, my God, I think it's more than that. I think we're living in the age of surprise. And boy, oh boy, when she said that, it was like, yeah, have you read the news recently? It's surprising.
Exactly. And I think you're making a really, really good point that there is a moment there of physiological moment that we have an opportunity. It's actually a choice point that we have an opportunity to change a habit right there in that instant. I know you both have something to say about that.
Well, a habit, really, it's a neuronet in the brain that you, it's like a highway that you go over and over and over. So it's a big super highway, that habit. And in order to break the habit, you have to change that neuronet. And that's what I was saying about the neuroplasticity, is that when that moment of surprise happens and you can rewire, basically you can take that habit and you can just change it and rewire your brain in that moment. And it may take you 10 years in therapy to do it, crying about it every other day, or maybe in that one moment you can just make the switch.
Just make the switch. I know that one of the things that you, advice, let's say, that you give to us is to have something at the ready. When those moments come, to have something at the ready that we know, a key, our own personal key to what it, to our gifts, what it is that we know that we can, we are firmly standing on. I want to talk more about that in just one moment.
Okay.
But I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with physicists William Arntz and mystic Deirdre Haid, and they are the co-creators of The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. And if you want to know more about their work, you can go to their website, bookofsurprises.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions Membership Support and by Clarity International, publisher of the book Get Clarity, The Lights-On Guide to Manifesting Success in Life and Work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
I'm here with physicist William Arntz and mystic Deirdre Haid. And they're a husband and wife team, and they've just combined their expertise and their enthusiasms in such a beautiful way. And we're talking about what we can do. What are the resources that we can use to change those habits we have that are maybe not so constructive, and to move ourselves into a new place when a surprise comes? And so we were talking about our core values or those keys. Mm-hmm. Can you say something about those?
Yes, absolutely. So when a surprise comes and the neuroplasticity changes in our brain, whether it's a good surprise or a not good surprise, we have an opportunity to change deep patterns inside of us. And one of the keys that you want to have to meet a surprise so that you can grow and change patterns that aren't serving you well is to really know right up front and center what your core values and virtues are for you personally. And we know these core values and virtues, like, oh, I think love conquers all, but they tend to stay behind us and kind of in the background. What I'm saying to you is to make this a key for you to have strength and resilience and to meet any surprise and to grow. You want those core values right up front in your frontal lobe directing you. You know, a core value could be, I believe that I am here to help uplift people no matter what. So what that means, that's one of my core values. It's right up front and center. Anything that happens in life, I then will take an action from that virtue. I will be able to stand in resilience. I won't get knocked over full.